Hi, it's Graham Stoney here, and we're talking about self-confidence. And I have a really special guest with me here. His name is Dr. Russ Harris, and he's the best-selling author of The Happiness Trap. But he's also written a book on confidence titled The Confidence Gap, From Fear to Freedom. So I'm really looking forward to picking Russ's brains about the topic of confidence. So welcome, Russ.
Thank you.
So to get started, Russ, tell me, how would you define confidence?
Well, that's an interesting question because there's two popular definitions. By far the most common definition, the one that you'll find first in the dictionary, is confidence is a feeling of certainty or assurance. Mm-hmm. But there's another much older definition. Confidence is an act of trusting or relying, an act of trust or reliance. And that older definition goes right back to the Latin origins. Confidence comes from the Latin com fides, meaning with faith or with trust. And it's important to recognize these two definitions because the kind of action of trusting yourself or relying on yourself comes first. It is only through doing that over and over that one day you then start to develop the feelings of certainty or assurance in your own ability.
Okay, so you're saying the action comes first and then the feelings follow that.
Yeah, I mean, most people, when they talk about confidence, you know, when people say to me all the time, you know, I need more confidence, what they really mean is I want to feel certain, I want to get rid of these feelings of anxiety. They're talking about confidence as a feeling. Mm-hmm. But that's a very recent meaning of the word. You know, going back in history, confidence didn't refer to a feeling. It referred to a quality of behavior, a quality of action, the action of trusting yourself or relying on yourself, regardless of whether you felt totally calm and relaxed or whether you felt absolutely terrified, that quality. And so if we want to build confidence in any area of life, it begins first with action, the action of trusting or relying on ourselves to step out of our comfort zone, do something challenging. And it's only when we do that over and over and actually develop the skills and get the experience that we then start to develop the feelings of confidence.
Okay, that makes sense. So confidence comes from taking action.
Comes from taking action, stepping out of your comfort zone repeatedly. I mean, competence precedes confidence. It's unrealistic to feel confident about something if you're not first competent. Like, I'm learning to ride a bike now. I kind of started last year at the age of 43, and I've only been doing it sporadically, so my bike riding skills are not very good. I'm wobbling all over the place. It's unrealistic for me to expect to feel confident because I don't yet have the skills and the experience to be competent. When I've, you know, repeatedly ridden that bike over and over and over and can really kind of handle it well, then I may well start to get some feelings of confidence. But the point is, what I do is each time I trust myself, I have I kind of take action, trusting myself, relying on myself to get on the bike and pedal and do it, even though I feel really kind of fearful and anxious, and I have to do that over and over and over before I will kind of get those feelings of confidence. So the number one rule of the confidence game is the actions of confidence come first, the feelings of confidence come later.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. So tell me, just going back a step, tell me, how did you come to be writing a book, The Confidence Gap? What led you to write that?
Well, as you mentioned, my first book, The Happiness Trap, was very successful, and my kind of career went in an interesting direction. I started running lots and lots of training for therapists and coaches and GPs and a variety of health professionals in the approach upon which these books is based. Mm-hmm. It's quite a sort of radical paradigm shift for most psychological professionals. This approach is popularly known as ACT, which mm-hmm. is an abbreviation for acceptance and commitment therapy or acceptance and commitment training. And what I would find is that lots of the folks who'd attended my workshops would say they really kind of loved the model and it had lots of great tools and techniques, but they didn't have enough confidence to use it. So that was one of the factors. The other is just my own personal journey. Like you, I have spent a lot of my life kind of struggling with a lack of self-confidence in many areas. And so I thought it was kind of interesting to draw on those experiences. And probably the third factor that influenced me is just it's one of the most common things that I see. You know, I work both as a therapist and as an executive coach, and lack of self-confidence is one of the most common things that people come to me for. So I just realized there was a huge need. And when I looked at most popular books on self-confidence, they all seemed to be about trying to control your feelings. They were all coming at confidence as a feeling and trying to control your feelings through positive thinking and self-hypnosis, and didn't really kind of acknowledge the reality that to develop those feelings, you're going to have to step out of your comfort zone and really learn a new way of responding to fear and anxiety, because on the journey of confidence, fear and anxiety is going to come with you.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say is the problem with those popular techniques? Because there's a whole bunch of self-help books out there that talk about positive thinking and those kind of things.
Well, I think the problem is that, you know, if you want to just give yourself a quick boost of self-confidence, then it's a bit of positive self-talk or listening to a self-hypnosis CD, you know, can really do that for sure. But when you're in a genuinely challenging situation, stepping out of your comfort zone into a challenging situation with an uncertain outcome, mm-hmm. all of those kind of feelings will just disappear. You're going to feel what people feel in challenging situations. You're going to have a fight or flight response. As a result of millions of years of evolution, this is what happens to the human body when you're in a challenging situation with an uncertain outcome. You have a fight or flight response. Your heart rate speeds up. Adrenaline levels rise. You get this voice in your head kind of warning you that you could get hurt or things might go wrong. And there's no way to kind of stop that from happening. What we need to do is learn a new way of responding to that fear and anxiety. You know, even the most successful, talented people on the planet will have the same feelings of fear and anxiety when they step out of their comfort zone. And the problem is the only way you can really develop genuine confidence is through stepping out of your comfort zone again and again and again. If we come back to the idea that competence precedes confidence, mm-hmm. how do you get competent at something when you're not already competent? You have to step out of your comfort zone, practice the skills, get the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can totally relate to what you're saying there. And certainly, I mean, the reason I became interested in the whole confidence thing, like you say, is because it's been part of my journey, not having it and working out, well, how do you get it? So, and that fight or flight response that you talk about, I can relate to how paralyzing that can be when you're in a situation where you want to act, but you've just frozen in fear. So how do you apply these ACT skills in those kind of circumstances to get past that?
Well, the thing is, it's not the fight or flight response or the fear or anxiety that paralyzes people or holds people back. What it is the way they respond to those thoughts and feelings.
Mm-hmm.
If you respond to those perfectly natural, normal thoughts and feelings, and I'm emphasizing natural and normal because in a lot of psychology books, feelings like fear and anxiety are referred to as negative emotions, as if there was something abnormal or unnatural about them, but that's what they're commonly called. And I think that's a great shame because, you know, you would be in trouble if you didn't have the capacity for fear and anxiety. We've evolved these responses to help us deal with challenging, uncertain situations. So it's not actually the fear and anxiety that's the problem, it's your attitude towards it. If your attitude is one of avoidance, I have to avoid these feelings, I have to get rid of these thoughts and feelings, I can't do the things that I really want to do until these thoughts and feelings have disappeared, then you're really stuck. You're stuck in what I call the confidence trap. The confidence trap is I have to feel confident before I do what matters. It's kind of, as long as you're coming at attitude of avoidance, these fear and anxiety is bad, thoughts about failing are bad, I have to get rid of them, they have to go away before I start taking action, you're in trouble. What we do in ACT is we teach people a new way to respond to these thoughts and feelings. Instead of an attitude of avoidance, we have an attitude of expansion. opening up and making room for these thoughts and feelings, allowing them to be there, dropping any struggle with them. So if I can just talk a little bit about mindfulness, is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So mindfulness is a mental state of awareness and openness and focus, and has been known about in Eastern philosophy for thousands of years, but only relatively recently discovered by Western psychology in the last 20 to 30 years. And in the ACT model, we teach people mindfulness skills to handle fear and anxiety in a new way. In a state of mindfulness, you can have all the thoughts about failing or not being good enough, but you just kind of let them come and go like they're cars driving past outside your house. You don't get caught up in them. You don't get held back by them. In a state of mindfulness, you can have very strong feelings of fear and anxiety, racing heart, you know, sweaty hands, but you don't get held back by them, nor do you get into a struggle with them. You kind of just learn how to let them flow through you. Mm-hmm. And in many situations, you can actually channel that fear and anxiety into what you're doing and actually enhance your performance. You know, all top stage performers know this. If you talk to a rock star or a stage, you know, performer, an actor, they will all kind of ask them what it's like before they go out on stage. They're all going to have the same experience. They're all going to be experiencing that fight or flight response, racing heart, etc. But they're not likely to call it anxiety or fear. They're far more likely to call it being revved or amped or buzzed or wired or an adrenaline rush. And that kind of conveys a very different attitude towards these feelings. It's an attitude of openness or expansion, making room for this stuff. And they will channel it into their performance and enhance their performance. But from time to time, a stage performer starts to revert back to a relationship of avoidance. I have to get rid of these. And the stage performer might kind of say, oh no, these feelings are bad. I have to get rid of them. I can't have this racing heart. I can't have these thoughts in my head. I'm not going to go out on stage until all these thoughts and feelings have disappeared. And at that point, it becomes stage fright.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting what you say, because I've noticed myself that the feelings associated with, say, excitement and anxiety, the bodily sensations are actually very similar, you know, the heart racing, the whole blood pumping adrenaline rush thing. So I'm wondering how important it is, the labels that we use, like the language that we use, to say like I'm anxious rather than to say I'm excited.
Well, I think the labels do make some difference, for sure, but it's not kind of like a simple quick fix. It's not as if, you know, if you're feeling really anxious and you suddenly start saying I'm feeling excited, as if that's going to make a huge difference for most people.
Uh-huh.
It's just not that simple. But you know, one of the things that we teach people in mindfulness is how to recognize that thoughts and feelings are transient events passing through you. So if you use normal social convention and you say, I am anxious, mm-hmm. it makes it sound like you are that emotion. But suppose you were to say, I'm noticing feelings of anxiety, or I'm having the feeling of anxiety, or I'm having thoughts about failing. That helps you start to kind of separate and recognize that these are thoughts and feelings passing through you. They're not the whole of you.
Mm-hmm. So you don't end up being so attached to them, because you're not really identifying as that's what you are. It's just the sensation you're having.
Yeah. If you can, one of the things I like to do with my clients that complain that, you know, fear and anxiety is holding them back, is get them in touch with it in this state of mindfulness and have them look at all the different components. And what you'll find is usually there's one component is words and pictures in the head. There'll be words about not being good enough or failing or something going wrong. There may well be images in your head, and then you'll notice some sensations in your body, a racing heart or sweaty hands or knots in the stomach. And we'll have a look at each one of those components with a real kind of mindset of openness and curiosity. Let's have a look at these elements inside my body that I'm so trying so hard to avoid or get rid of, and let's see if I really need to fight with this stuff. Let's see how bad it really is. Mm-hmm. So if you kind of zoom in with that attitude of childlike curiosity and really notice what's happening in your heart and study it like a, you know, a curious scientist who's paid good money to have the opportunity to study this phenomenon and notice that heart racing and where it is and what temperature it is and what it feels like, or those knots in your stomach or that voice in your head. What you tend to find is that after you've done this, you realize that there's actually not one single element of fear or anxiety that is really bad or horrible or awful that I have to try and fight with or run away from. And you kind of learn how to make room for all of it. It's a very alien concept to Western culture. We live in a feel-good society that is obsessed with feeling good, obsessed with positive thinking, and we kind of taught from a young age that we have to get rid of feelings that are unpleasant or thoughts that are negative. And if we could do that, it would be fantastic. But I'm sure many of your listeners know full well that those strategies don't really work in the long term.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is, rather than trying to push away these feelings of fear and anxiety, adopt this sort of observer point of view where you're noticing what's going on and expanding your mindfulness or your consciousness to recognize that you're big enough to handle this anxiety and that it's all going to be okay.
Yeah, there's. I wouldn't say to someone it's all going to be okay, because you don't know. I mean, the whole point is you're stepping out of your comfort zone into an uncertain situation, and so, you know, again, some of the self-hypnosis programs will have you kind of tell yourself it's all going to be okay, it's all going to turn out for the best. But I think that's just setting people up for unrealistic expectations. You know, sometimes it will and sometimes it won't. Here's where we're back to the idea of confidence as an action. Confides not only means with trust, it also means with faith. From fides, we get the words like fidelity, being true to yourself. And so, you know, let's kind of be true to myself. Is this important? Is what I'm about to do, is it really important? Would I be being the ideal person I really want to be if I take this action? By definition, you don't know what the outcome will be. Otherwise, it wouldn't be an act of faith. So let's kind of take an act of faith. Let's step out of my comfort zone, take action, and let's just engage fully in what happens. Live in the present moment. Give my full attention to what is going on in this moment, rather than getting too caught up in what the ultimate outcome will be.
Mm-hmm. So being less attached to how things go and just going with what is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously there's time and a place to kind of plan the future and set goals, but most people who lack self-confidence and certainly spend too much time obsessing about the future. Will I fail? Am I good enough? What's going to go wrong? You know, or trying to talk themselves into it. It'll all be fine. I'll be okay. You know, while that kind of self-talk comes naturally to us, it actually doesn't really help most people. Mm-hmm. Self-talk can be helpful, but I think you're better to have realistic self-talk. For example, might say, okay, I'm noticing fear, or I'm noticing anxiety in my body. I'm noticing that racing heart. Here's my mind telling me all the things that can go wrong. And then kind of reminding yourself, this is important. Whatever this action is, it's something that matters to me. It's meaningful to me. Of course, if the course of action you're planning to take is not meaningful or important, why are you bothering with it? Uh-huh. But if it is... But if it is important and meaningful, remind yourself of that. You know, is it in line with your values? Are you doing something that is important deep in your heart? And if you are doing something that's important deep in your heart, are you willing to make room for the fear and anxiety that's likely to accompany you on that journey?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the popular myths about confidence is that when you're really confident at something, then there'll be no more fear and anxiety. And that is just not the case. You know, Lance Armstrong is a really good example. Lance Armstrong, you know, one of the greatest athletes in human history, 7 times winner of the Tour de France. If you read interviews with Lance's teammates, his fellow cyclists, coaches, trainers, people that work with him, they all say the same thing. They say, Lance, he's so confident. He has no fear of failure.
Uh-huh.
That's what they all say, but that's not what Lance Armstrong says. You know, I've quoted him in The Confidence Gap, a lovely quote. He says, I fear failure. I have a huge phobia around failure.
Uh-huh.
So not fear of failure, phobia of failure. Now, this is an incredibly confident guy with an amazing track record, and he still has a phobia of failure. The problem is that Lance doesn't say this very often. He, you know, in 99 out of 100 interviews, he doesn't talk about this. And because he doesn't freely talk about it, people around him assume it's not there.
The full interview goes on to cover the power of mindfulness and how to develop it, normalizing confidence, fear and anxiety, how to powerfully overcome phobias, how to handle failure, the three core skills of ACT, and more. It's available as a free bonus when you purchase the Confident Man ebook from confidentman.net/ebook.